Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group, and we're located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94. We're between Highway 164 and Highway F in the Ridgeview Corporate Park. We're also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building, directly across from Winkies, and we're blessed to be able to service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. If you would like to put a face with a voice, a little bit about me, you can go to ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Mike Roth, and I'm just going to say it, I always do, he's one of my absolutely most favorite guests to have on the radio show, and Mike has been doing Money Sense for, I don't know, probably 20 years or somewhere in there. And I do remember the first time I asked him, he said, I don't do radio. And I said, well, but you got to do my radio. And the reason I wanted him to do the radio was because he has become, was, and at that time, and continues to be such a mentor to me. And when I would be looking at some of the different things that were happening in the world, and as they would affect my clients and their portfolio, Mike just had a gift of being able to break it down for me so that I could understand it. And he gave me so many great suggestions that I've implemented into how I invest with my clients. And so, Michael, I'm just going to publicly say thank you for being such a great mentor and a friend all these years, and your willingness to do Money Sense and not only share how you spoke to me and how you helped me understand what was going on in this world, but the gift of just wanting to do that for my listeners has been a treasure.
Well, Karen, as usual, you're way too generous. I appreciate all of that. But it's really been my privilege to be on the program. And to, you know, anytime people are willing to listen to you, it's a compliment. So I appreciate that very much. I try to approach the markets in a very sort of straightforward way. And to the extent it's been helpful to you and others, I'm glad.
Well, thank you, Michael. And you know, this has been a roller coaster this first quarter. And one of the things that I always say to my clients is, well, it is a roller coaster, but you don't know anyone that jumps off a roller coaster midstream. They wait till it lands before they get off. And so what are you looking at? What has been going on with this crazy first quarter?
Sure. Well, just to set the stage, and your roller coaster analogy is spot on. I think people sort of got into this space where, wow, the market just goes up and hardly ever retraces in any significant way. And of course, the first quarter, at least to date, has been quite the opposite. As people will probably remember well, coming into the year, we had the Trump bump. The market roared up. I think people felt, based upon his first administration, it's very market friendly. There's going to be a Trump put, so to speak, which is a way of saying that, you know, he is very protective of the market. And if things start getting bad, you know, he'll step in and do things. So as a result, I think there's a lot of hope over about deregulation, sparking economic activity. The market rallied hard. what happened? Well, on February 19th was sort of the high water mark. On February 19th, we hit an all-time high. I mean, all-time high for the market. And then since then, the market went down. Now, again, going to your roller coaster analogy, if we had talked on Friday, the 21st of March, we would have said, oh, you know, the S&P is down 5.7% and 3.5% year to date. And voila, over the weekend and coming into Monday, the market rallies hard. So as we're speaking right now, the S&P is down about 1.5% year to date. That's all because of comments made over the weekend about tariffs and how they may not be as widespread as people feared. So the market rallies. And then, so again, the roller coaster aspect of it. So I think what you're seeing here is the market is nervous. So why the downturn? And it's got to do with uncertainty. Markets hate uncertainty. And what they've been getting from Trump is a quote unquote surprise. It shouldn't have been a surprise because what he's really doing, at least in my estimation, I want to say here sort of as a sidebar, it's hard to talk about what's going on in the markets because of the extreme politicization of everything. Everything is about politics these days, it seems. And so you read an analysis and you have to try to figure out, is there a political slant to it or not? And I'm going to try to be as neutral as possible about this. I'm going to describe what's going on and what I think the Trump administration is doing. And you may agree or not agree with it, but I'm going to at least describe what I think is the motivation behind it. So uncertainty, and in particular focused on the possibility of a recession. So you start with the proposition that the market, I think to analyze this, you have to start with the proposition that the market, first of all, came into the year extremely rich. I mean, this is not a cheap market. And if you just look at the metrics, you'd say the S&P right now is above the 90th percentile in terms of valuations of all time. Or put a different way, in terms of PE ratio, which is a measure of value, the S&P is trading 25 times earnings. And the historical average is 14. So this is a rich market. As a result, it doesn't take a whole lot of quote unquote uncertainty to cause the market to be volatile. And we've seen that. At the same time, while the market came off, it also has now rallied back. Again, the market is sort of reacting almost headline to headline as to what's going on. So one, extremely rich market. Number two, we're coming into the year, and I think that this is really the core behind what's going on with the Trump administration policy. We have structural problems, and everyone knows about the structural problems, but of course, like all problems, people don't really want to deal with them. So we have the huge deficit problem. We've had inflation problems. We've had, you might argue, really out of control government spending, which fuels the deficit. We obviously have had a situation where the economy has been propped up by a lot of this government spending and for a long period of time, you know, really unnaturally low interest rates. We've had the immigration issue. We've had the offshoring problem where U.S. manufacturing industries have gone overseas. We've had trade imbalances. So I think when you're looking at, okay, what's happening here, I would say that, yes, the market is concerned about recessions. They're concerned about the tariffs, immigration restrictions, and I'm just going to call it DOGE, which is the Department of Government Efficiency. And that's another way of saying we're seeing contractionary fiscal policy, which is a fancy way of saying that the government is starting to cut waste and cut spending. So what's Trump doing here? And are the recession concerns that have been rocking the market legit? Well, I think that you have to see that Trump, I think, is working to a plan. And again, you may not agree with the plan, But I think he has come out and said it. He is willing to risk recession in order to deal with these systemic problems. I think he's coming in and saying these problems need to be tackled. And if they're not tackled, we're going to have a lot bigger issues with the economy in the market. And now's the time to do it, because I've got the wind at my back. I'm coming off this election victory. Politically, you know, he can always look back and say, well, it's Biden's fault, blah, 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 all that stuff. But I think that you have to understand that is where he's coming from. Now, let's talk about recession for a second. I think that, first of all, recessions are not to be feared. Nobody likes to have a recession, but there's a thing called the business cycle, which says that, yes, we go through times, we have great times, and then we have times that are harder, or things get overdone, and we have recessions. Now, we have not had a real recession for over 15 years. So you have to go back to 2007, 2008, when we had the housing bubble and the Great Recession. And since then, there have been no recessions. And I think a big reason for that has been a lot of policies, a lot of government spending, a lot of artificially low interest rates, which, yes, they were able to sort of push off a recession, but it exacerbated a lot of these structural problems. So no recession, but at the cost of this ginormous all-time deficit and the inflation that we're seeing now. Now, there's some pandemic stuff thrown in there too, in terms of spending. But I think that, we're sort of overdue for a recession. I think Trump is saying, essentially, we're going to go back to letting the laws of economics work. We're not going to try to artificially prevent a recession by making all our structural problems work. But I've got a plan, okay? And his plan essentially is to try to avoid a recession and rev up the economy and deal with these structural issues through things like tariffs, cutting government spending, controlling immigration, et cetera. Now, one other thing I'll say about recession and the market's fear of it, it's really very anticipatory. If you look at the hard data, now there's hard data and there's soft data. And the soft data are things like inflation expectations and consumer sentiment. And they have definitely turned negative. People see this volatility and they see, you know, the market going down. And their sentiment decreases also. But if you look at the hard data indicates that we're not in a recession and we're not, you know, likely to have one soon. So just yesterday, the S&P comes out with this, it's called a PMI, Purchasing Managers Index, which is essentially a survey and it gauges economic activity, manufacturing and service sectors. And it rose in February. And it rose to a point, again, that suggests that overall activity, it continues to expand. And in fact, it's been expanding in the fastest pace than it has over the last several months. You look at job growth statistics. You look at unemployment rate, which is at a level that's just slightly above full employment, like 4.1%. You look at jobless claims and layoffs, very low. You look at consumer spending, slowing down, but still pretty robust, actually, under the circumstances. So all of the hard data does not suggest a recession at all. So it doesn't mean we can have one. It doesn't mean that the policies that Trump is pursuing might not lead to one, but that's not happening right now. Stepping back, you say, well, what's really Trump trying to accomplish here? And I would say that we're probably at a point where I should pause. I launched into that. But again, to sort of summarize, we're coming into the market pretty rich. We're coming into a period of uncertainty because of these policies, because the market didn't take Trump at his word, but he's doing what he said he was going to do. And the result has been a lot of volatility.
So, Mike, let's take a pause.
And when we come back, let's talk about how do individuals, investors, how do they, how can they stand with what you call this uncertainty, and what does it look for them going forward? And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he is a partner in Black Maple Capital right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Mike, honestly, I love the way that you can break down some of the things that are happening in a way that I want to say that people can actually hear it. It makes sense. I mean, we listen to all these talking heads on TV, and all they want to do is promote anxiety and concern. And they do. I mean, this whole idea of uncertainty, and you establish a strong baseline that I think people can really recognize what's going on. But it's always that big concern is, and what about me? What about me?
Well, that's a legitimate concern, because at the end of the day, the only reason that you're listening to this program and the only reason that people entrust their hard-earned money to you is because they ultimately want to get a decent return on their money. They want to be able to hopefully improve their lifestyle, et cetera. So for the individual who doesn't want to and really shouldn't spend their life focused on the markets, who would rather enjoy life, but nonetheless, they see all of a sudden the market, which they've unfortunately gotten somewhat accustomed to seeing go up all the time, start to have some volatility, it makes them nervous. I mean, I don't laugh, but I think that I see these articles where people say, oh my gosh, I was planning on retiring and now the market went down and I can't. And I'm thinking like, well, you can't really pin your planning, your retirement planning on the idea that the market's never going to go down. Yes, we've had a very great run. I think a lot of that great run, as I said earlier, somewhat artificial, because this government spending and the deficit spending and everything else has sort of created an artificial environment, so that we've had a period of what I would call somewhat artificial stability. And I believe, as I said earlier, I think Trump and his administration is coming in and saying that, in fact, I think J.D. Vance, vice president, just had a speech a couple of days ago where he basically said this. He said that our view is that for the last 40 some years, we've had a situation where we've continued to not deal with the real problems and to allow the deficit to grow. And we're here and we're going to change that. So for individuals, I think you have to say, yes, there's going to be some volatility. Taking the medicine, which is what I think Trump is saying, is never pleasant. But I think longer term, the argument is that this is going to put us in a much better position. Again, I'm not here to say what Trump is doing is right or not, but I'm trying to explain what their thinking is and how you should then view it. So that when you say, well, oh my gosh, what about these tariffs? Or what about what he's doing with immigration? Or what about this all this cost cutting? It is to a purpose. And I think the purpose is to deal with these structural issues. So what do you do as an investor? Well, I think you have a decision to make. If you have no appetite for any volatility and you're in for, well, I just want to see the market go up every day. Well, yeah, you're going to be disappointed because I think we're going to see some volatility because we are going to be taking the medicine. But I don't think your investors, and I don't think most people should be thinking that way. You have to think with a bit of a longer term horizon, and you have to say, well, I do believe, or I think that we're getting on the right track, that it's good to deal with these structural issues. Of course, you can't just put anything on autopilot. So if it looks like things are going off the rails and Trump's policies are wrong, maybe you have to react to that, and maybe you have to take some money out of the market. But I think right now is way too early in the game to say, oh my gosh, we're seeing some volatility in the market, and therefore somehow the end of the world. I think that at least for the time being, and this is why the markets are rallying now, they're sort of saying, well, boy, this is not what we expected, quote unquote, uncertainty. You know, we had a big hiccup when we first were confronted with this uncertainty, but now they're sort of getting, okay, I think I see where he's going with this. And for instance, just take the tariffs, okay, as an example. You read about it all the time, you hear about it all the time. And I think the tariffs have to be viewed in, it's trying to address, I think that's his one of his primary weapons to deal with a bunch of structural problems. So the tariffs vis-a-vis the deficit, for instance, I think his feeling is we can bring in revenue. You know, he's referred to tariffs as being the external revenue service. So he wants to bring down deficits, which means you do two things. You increase revenue and you decrease spending. So he doesn't want to raise taxes because I think he views lowering taxes as being part of the rev up the economy theme. So he wants to bring in revenue from outside sources, i.e. through tariffs from other countries. Secondly, I think the tariffs should be viewed as a big bargaining chip, and we're seeing it. He wants to essentially say to other countries, one, there's trade imbalances. We've had a huge amount of trade imbalances where we buy stuff and we don't sell as much stuff. And therefore, we're on the wrong end of that. And he wants to correct it. So he's saying that I'm going to put tariffs on you just like you put tariffs on us. And we want a more fair, balanced trade situation. Okay. And the bargaining chip is designed to essentially make that happen. Secondly, from both an economic as well as a national security perspective, we've had this huge offshoring problem. And we've become, as I think the vice president said, addicted to cheap labor. Let's move everything to other countries where we can make things more cheaply, with the result that we've gutted the manufacturing capacity of the United States. That has both economic consequences in terms of wages and labor, and it also has national security consequences. So we are dependent upon other countries, sometimes hostile countries or potentially hostile countries like our frenemy China, for essential national security items. And he wants to correct that. So by imposing tariffs, he's essentially saying to companies, well, if you really want to sell your goods in the United States, you need to bring your manufacturing here back to this country. And otherwise, you're going to get slammed with tariffs. You're not going to sell anything here. So the result of that is, and we're already beginning to see it. In fact, yesterday, Hyundai announced that they're going to be building a $20 billion plant in the United States. Rolls-Royce is going to be building a plant in the United States. The UAE, United Arab Emirates, has pledged to invest $1.4 trillion in the United States. So I think the tariffs are essentially yet another bargaining chip to essentially make that happen, to force companies to come back to the U.S., build plants here, shore up our national security. Now, could tariffs increase inflation? Potentially, in the near term, certainly. So none of these things are one-way streets. But I think he's saying, on balance, it's more important that we fix these other issues. Maybe it causes us to have some inflation, but then he would say, I have plans to deal with inflation in other ways to offset that. So understanding that, again, you may agree or disagree. I'm not saying that that's going to happen or that's the right thing, but that's their thinking at this point in time. So tariffs do all of those things. I think that you look at what's going on with Doge, which is essentially designed to cut government spending. Again, it has multiple sort of vectors of attack on the other structural issues. So if you cut expenses and you cut waste, by definition, you are beginning to cut the deficit. Also, to the extent that you're now cutting government spending, you're starting to address the inflation issue, because government spending essentially is part of the demand problem. If you take away government spending, it helps ease demand, which helps ease inflation. I think that you can look at the idea that cutting waste, cutting excess people, yes, there's going to be some unemployment on the back of that. But I think the ultimate idea is that this is not productive use to have government workers who essentially are not adding to the economy. And we can put these people to better use. So with respect to that, again, there's sort of an, it's not just let's do this and not have a purpose to it. The idea is to address these issues. When you look at inflation and the policies he's pursuing, he wants to boost oil production to lower energy prices. He wants to essentially sort of a supply side economics approach to say that I want to rev up the U.S. economy. I want to bring these companies back. And by doing that, it's going to have this very sort of positive cycle. By stimulating growth, is going to create essentially a scenario where supply begins to outstrip demand. Long-term economic growth is going to increase productivity, increase efficiency, and then reduce inflation by increasing the supply of goods and services. So all of these things, essentially, I think from the investor perspective, you have to say, well, I may or may not completely buy into it, but I think the market is saying that, well, we have concerns. We have concerns that some of these things might not be entirely positive, but I think on balance right now, the market is saying that, well, okay, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and see how extreme it is, see how bad it is. So you can already see the sort of poker game that's going on with tariffs, where he'll come out and he'll say, well, I'm going to put a blanket ginormous tariff on this. And then he begins to dial it back. And so the market's first reaction is, oh, ginormous tariff. And then they go, oh, wait, he's dialing it back. So hence the roller coaster we've been experiencing.
You know, Mike, we'll take another break. But when you were describing what's going on, I think most of us at one time of our life or not have had to cut back, have had to, you know, we're looking at the government in a much larger focus, but most of us at one time or another in our life have had something that has happened. There's been uncertainty. We've got to cut back. We've got a budget. So when you look at it from a personal level, it does make sense.
I think so. But again, it's such a political minefield. people say, makes sense. Are you out of your mind? But I do believe any sane person would say, you look at the deficits, you look at inflation, everything else, we just can't let this go on. And whether his medicine is the right medicine or not, it is something we have to deal with.
We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Mike Roth. I don't want to take a second away by a lot of introductions for him, but he is the partner in Black Maple Capital right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Michael, I know I threw out to you, you know, how can my listeners find certainty in an uncertain world? How do they manage to keep their feet on the ground?
If investors know how to get certainty in an uncertain world, please tell me, because I've been searching for that for most of my career. And you know, that's a funny way, or hopefully a funny way of saying that, of course, there is no certainty.
Right.
And you can get an artificial sense of certainty, but there's a cost to that. As the saying goes, there are no solutions, only compromises. And so we've been living in a period of quote unquote certainty, but at the same time, nobody wants to look over here at stage left and see all these problems that have been accumulating. And as we've said, for investors, I think you have to sort of sit back and say, all right, I'm going to accept the fact that Trump, at least with the best of intentions, wants to deal with these structural issues. Again, you may or may not agree with the methods he's using, but at least understand that is what is going on. It's not just some sort of insane, you know, just throwing stuff against the wall. I think they're working toward a plan. And that plan is a living, breathing thing. And so, again, that's why you can't just put things on autopilot. They're going to be adjusting and changing. And obviously, there's a huge global game going on right now where people are adjusting to what Trump is doing. There's going to be move, counter move, et cetera. And so you have to be somewhat aware of what's going on. But unless you have no taste for risk whatsoever, you got to be prepared for more volatility in your portfolio than perhaps you've seen over the past several years. That's just, I think, a fact. And you either have faith ultimately that Trump's on the right path, and that in the intermediate term to long term, we are going to deal with these issues, and it's going to be a much better economy, a much better future for our country, or not, and just react accordingly. But I would say I would not let politics dictate my thinking in terms of my investments. And so a lot of people just can't divorce those things. But to me, it's, you know, like him or not like him, disagree with particular policies. But ultimately, you have to sort of open your eyes and at least in terms of your portfolio, just pay attention to what's happening and where he's going and what he's doing. And again, look past some of the poker moves to figure out what's really trying to accomplish here. One issue we didn't discuss, which is immigration, not entirely an economic issue, although it has economic implications. Obviously, you know, that is, talk about political minefields. I don't want to get into, you know, the morality of the issue. But the fact of the matter is, we obviously had a huge influx of illegal immigrants, and Trump campaigned, and I think that the polls would support this. You know, people want to reverse that. We certainly are not opposed to immigration. We are a country of immigrants. But I think that the idea here is that we want it done in an orderly and legal way. And it was not done in an orderly and legal way. And hopefully people won't view that as a political statement, but more of a statement of fact. But from an economic and market standpoint, well, you'll see on the one hand, the argument is, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to, if we deport these people, it's going to affect the labor situation. It's going to force companies to pay more because they're not going to have the cheap labor of these immigrants. It's going to hurt GDP in some way because they're not going to be here to produce economic activity. And I think there very clearly Trump is saying, well, you know, if you have to pay people a living wage in order to get them to work, I don't think that's a problem. And it might cause some wage push inflation because that's the argument. Well, you know, if you have to start paying people more money, it's going to be inflationary. And I think they're saying, yeah, but we've got other things going on to reduce inflation. All the stuff we've talked about in terms of reducing the deficit, reducing government spending, et cetera, is designed to help tackle inflation. But we don't think you should be hiring people at below market wages as a way of, you know, taking care of inflation. So that's their approach. You can agree or disagree. But that's, I think, where they're coming from. I think they also feel like there's enough slack in the economy so that to the extent that illegals are deported, there's enough in the workforce to make up for that. So that's the economic spin on it. I'm avoiding all the moral and other issues. I think that is definitely going on also. So taken all together, when you look at what Trump is trying to accomplish, and we've talked about things like lowering interest rates and getting more balanced trade and dealing with the deficit, dealing with inflation. There are also some very specific areas. Fentanyl is obviously one of them. So when you read about the tariffs, I think this is not so much a market issue as it is just an issue that he wants to address, which is that he wants to stop the fentanyl trade. So if he needs to whap, you know, Mexico and Canada over the head with tariffs to get them to step up and help with the fentanyl issue, he's going to do that. Is there an economic cost to it? Yes. But I think he's saying that in his view, it's more important that we get this fentanyl issue under control than to worry about the tariff issue. That's, again, you can agree or disagree, but that's his approach. The other thing I'll touch on, which we haven't talked about, is geopolitics. And this is a traditional area of uncertainty, and sometimes the markets will get some indigestion from it. Obviously, there's a huge effort on his part right now to try to get the Ukraine-Russia situation resolved. And I think he views this not only as a in human costs, obviously the horrific loss of life there, but also viewing it from an economic standpoint. I think he believes that we can have a productive economic relationship with Ukraine and Russia. And if you look at Russia, Russia has resources, natural resources. We want natural resources. We have stuff that they would like to buy. So I think he views it very naturally through that prism. I think he also is viewing all of this through the prism of China. And I think he believes that there's a good geopolitical reason to have a relationship with Russia and essentially sort of use them as a wedge vis-a-vis China. So I think that's part of it also. I think the tariffs are designed to essentially help deal with a very hyper-aggressive China. I mean, they just had their economic congress, and they're, as I said, hyper-aggressive in terms of their plans for dominating markets and taking over natural resources, et cetera. So I think the pushback on that is going to be the tariffs. Again, this is more of a very strategic national security type of thing, export bans, et cetera. But you have to understand that a lot of times when you read about tariffs or something like that, there are lots of sort of moving parts behind the scenes. Some of it economic, and we've discussed that in great detail, but some of it is also having to do with the great geopolitical game, particularly vis-a-vis China. So again, when you're thinking about your portfolio and you're saying like, oh my gosh, I'm reading about these tariffs and everything else. First of all, you shouldn't be spending your life trying to analyze tariffs. Well, trust me, it's a total waste of your life. But secondly, you have to appreciate there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And I think the markets are starting to get that. And that's why you're seeing the markets rallying because they are beginning to get sort of the tempo of what Trump's doing. And I think starting to get a greater appreciation for the motivations behind it. Again, you may not agree, and you may say, well, there's all these other risks associated with it, but at least you, when you're thinking about it in terms of your portfolio, understand sort of these are the motivations behind it.
My guest today is Mike Roth, and he has been on the radio, a guest for so many years. And, you know, Mike, you are the person, and I think it's 20, 25 years ago that I remember sitting down with you and said, how can I take some of the risk out of my clients' portfolios when we go through these markets? And you spent a great deal of time helping me understand the bond markets and how it might influence our portfolios. And so one of our strategies, of course, is diversification. And the other one is that we protect our clients' income for 5 to 7 years with having bond ladders, so that when we do go through these uncertain times, a bond comes due every year to the amount of money they need to spend in that year. And we can protect the rest of the portfolio against the volatility and not have to sell. And of course, I always say it only works when you own high quality and you know what you own. So part of it is too, is I'd like to just look in this last segment that we have at the outlook, of course, for the year and the importance that diversification still plays. And with that, we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he is a partner in Black Maple Capital right here in Milwaukee. And Mike, I'm just going to let you run because we've got so few minutes left. I could listen to you talk all day.
Well, that's not what my wife says, but okay. Well, first of all, again, you're too kind. I think, had a pretty good grasp of managing risk and dealing with it through diversification before you ever met me. And obviously you've done a tremendous job because you've had such a spectacular business and your investors have great confidence in the way you've handled their money. But you put your finger on it. I mean, I think that whatever you think, again, you may be a red hat wearing Trumper or you may be a true blue Democrat, but the bottom line is look at your portfolio in a very dispassionate, non-political way, but don't obsess over it. You know, you put in place some fundamental things. You obviously keep your head on a swivel because you want to be aware of what's going on, but diversification is one of the primary ways you manage risk. Anything can happen. Nothing's a slam dunk. If you thought NVIDIA was the thing, well, it was at one point, but then it came off. And so there's no such thing as a sort of slam dunk. This is the investment. So from that concept of diversification, what's the sort of the base case for the year? First of all, it's only March. So we got a long way to go if you're just looking at the year. And I would say, don't look at it in terms of a year anyway. You know, you're a longer term investor. Think of it in those terms, not simply what about next quarter or what about next month. If you're following returns like that, boy, you're going to have a queasy stomach because there's going to be, you know, more ups and downs. I think the base case, if you just looked, took a survey of sort of analysts, is that we're still in for a positive year, but it's going to be weaker than anticipated. This is their acknowledgement that, huh, we thought we were getting Trump 1.0 and we're getting Trump 2.0. Well, we weren't expecting Trump 2.0. He's a politician who's really doing what he said he was going to do. So hence the sort of dialing back of the growth projections. But if you just take an example, so Morgan Stanley just came out with their projections for the year based upon what they've been seeing over the first 3 months. And they revised it from an estimate, originally 1.9% growth for the year. And now they're saying that it's going to be more like 1.5%. So, oh, wait, 1.9 to 1.5? That's not exactly a huge sort of deviation. But I think that's what you're seeing from most analysts. I think they're acknowledging that there's going to be more uncertainty. There's going to be more volatility, but ultimately not a huge deviation from what they originally expected. And part of that is that a lot of the stuff that Trump is doing is not going to have immediate effect. You know, it takes a while to sort of work its way through the system. Hence, they can get away with saying, well, for 2025, here's what we're seeing. But I think also they're starting to hedge their bets a little bit here. And they're saying essentially that, well, you know, maybe this stuff is actually going to work and things are going to get better. So that's why you're seeing this sort of middling dialing back of performance. But I think investors should take that as this is not a red alert, you know, get out of the market type of situation, but like normal, you know, you should be aware of what's going on, not obsessive. But if you're coming in a good diversified portfolio, I think you're going to be okay.
Mike, this is interesting. I sort of when had this vision of what Trump is doing is looking at a messy closet, taking everything out and putting back in it what would be the best things to keep and to save and get rid of the junk we don't need anymore.
I think ideally that's what he'd like to think about it. But of course, the devil's in the details.
That is true. My guest today is Mike Roth, and Mike is the partner for Black Maple Capital here in Milwaukee. And Mike, thank you so much. I know that you'll be back, and I really appreciate how you approach the market, and you are right down the middle. You're not on the right, you're not on the left, you're on the middle and giving us the facts. So thank you so much. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great weekend. Bye.